Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
An Erio's original.
When I talk about abortion with folks, when they say, like, you know, what do you think the most egregious laws are that come down upon abortion restrictions? I often say I think the waiting periods are the most dangerous, because what that's doing is creating within societal norms a mistrust of the decisions that women and people make.
It's taking over my dreams, waking me. Hi, this is Margaret Cho. You're listening to The Margaret Cho. Today we have an amazing comedian, activist. She created The Daily Show. She's Liz Winstead. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Margaret. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk to you at length instead of in that convoluted, we have 2 seconds to talk, and we're going to talk for 2 seconds, like we did at the telephone.
Way too fast. How's your quarantine?
You know, my quarantine has been better probably than most people, because I'm lucky, you know. But it's weird to be. I'm alone, and so it's been kind of like, how do I describe it? I'm okay with being by myself. But I do get a little bit stir crazy. I don't know about you, but focus has been super hard for me. And so reading books, which is something I can normally do all day long, like when I have self-imposed quarantine, I have fine. But in this new world, I'm just sort of struggling to hit the page with my eyes and stuff like that. So it's okay. How about you?
I understand that. I definitely understand that. I think it's really hard. I mean, books are even too difficult for me. Like, I have to go back. I can't even do movies, really. I have to go back. I can't even do color movies. I'll have to do, like, maybe animation, and then I'll have to do, like, sometimes I can't even do that. I'll have to do black and white movies, and sometimes silent movies. And sometimes just pictures.
And sometimes you just draw a turkey with your hand on a piece of paper.
Sometimes maybe like a flip book. I don't know. Like, it's like a really, I can't follow. Like, people are like, oh, I binged Ozark. I can't even watch a television show. I can't focus on anything.
I feel you. And what I have discovered is very interesting is, you know, my work is so politically charged and intense that my release has been really like teen dramas and teen things like Riverdale and Elite and Pen 15.
Oh, I love Pen 15.
Have I ever? I'm just watching all of the teen angst that
I can get. Euphoria?
I haven't, because I think it's too intense for me.
Oh, I love it. It's,
you think I should watch it now? Great. Am I out of quarantine?
No, watch it now.
Okay.
It's so beautiful. It's my favorite, but I love Pen 15. I mean, that makes me so excited. I love it. I love going back to the John Hughes movies.
Yes. Well, the soundtracks too. You know, I found in my COVID, what am I going to do with myself? I started cleaning out my closets, and I found two massive boxes of cassettes and mixtapes from mostly the like late 70s in through the 90s. And so I've been going on Facebook and pulling them out at random and just having music conversations with people.
Oh, wow.
It's been really, really fun because I found shit like I have a copy of Elvis Costello Live from the Bottom Line in 1977.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I've got like old Soul Asylum demo tapes. I've got some Replacements demo tapes. I've got like this like old Husker Du cassette that came out on their last tour that I never opened because I knew it was going to be worth something. And then I have all these boyfriend tapes that I made and tapes that boyfriends made for me or guys that were trying to fuck me. And that's been really interesting to see, like, what was I like in 1986 and what kind of mixtape would a guy make for me? And it's like all over the map from like Etta James to like Nick Cave to Hank Williams. Yeah, so that's been really fun to like revisit that, but I don't have a cassette player.
Oh, so you couldn't listen to, so how would you?
I'm talking through them, and then what I've done is I've made Spotify, I've made playlists on my iPhone based on my cassettes.
Oh wow, I see. Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah,
that's incredible. So then, so you know what I remember about you was that. Janine Garofalo was telling me in the 90s that Bob Mould was staying with you in New York because you guys were friends. And I think she was staying with you, too, at some point. You were both staying. They were both staying at your apartment at some point in New York City. I think you were actually living in the city then.
That's right. I was living in Manhattan. And then Bob was moving back from Austin, Texas to New York and needed a place to stay, staying with me. And I also, he and Vic Chestnut and I did a bunch of dates together on his first solo record after the Huskers broke up. It called Workbook. And we did some opening dates with him. And that was really fun too. So yeah, I mean, I'm from Minneapolis. And so all those Minneapolis folks, it was kind of a cool time to grow up in the early 80s because there was like the music scene and the comedy scene was 100% intertwined, not unlike San Francisco and Boston. There was that kind of mixture. And then we were all working day jobs at the same restaurants. And so we would cover each other's shifts for gigs and then subsequently also put each other on each other's guest list. So I never had to pay for music ever. And it was great. And we were roommates together. And so it was a really cool cultural scene at the time. I really cherished that actually.
So who was there in Minneapolis and it's, like music and comedy wise, like that's like.
So that's in the early 80s heyday time, music wise, it was the Replacements, Husker Du, Prince, Soul Asylum, the Jayhawks, and then kind of smaller bands that were sort of this like a big rockabilly scene and a funk scene at the time. And then comedy wise, it was. Louis Anderson had just moved, but it was Joel Hodgson, Frank Conniff.
Was it Tom Arnold?
Tom Arnold. And then
Mike Gandolfi, was that after?
Mike Gandolfi, Harmon Leon, Liz White.
Liz is so great.
Yes. And I'm trying to think who else at the time. Paul Dillery, Joe Keys, this smaller.
Oh, Go Chew Keys. Paul Dillery was great. And Ken Ballard.
Ken Ballard, yes. Exactly.
The Minneapolis guys. Mitch Hedberg, too.
Mitch came a little bit later.
A little later, yeah.
Mitch came a little bit later, but definitely out of that same kind of scene.
Probably Roger Rittenhouse as well.
Yep.
A little later.
Denver. Roger was Denver.
Denver.
Yep, but we always got mixed up together, us Denver people and the Minneapolis people. We were always crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Paul Dillery. I forgot about Paul Dillery.
I know, right? That was just this sweet scene. And it still got incredibly smart audiences. And so it was really nice to grow, fail. You could just fuck around in a town where no eyes were on you from the industry. And then you got to meet folks to come through and then work with them. So you could develop relationships and your act in this really cool Midwestern spot. So when you wanted to move, you had a group of friends to come and then stay with, learn from, and it was pretty great.
Wow. That was a, yeah, that I remember that there was actually like Janine did a joke about, this is all like a joke from the 90s about how if she had, there was a fire, a house fire, that she, all she had was like a mixtape and a really matte red lipstick and like a replacement t-shirt. Like that she would run out of her house with this.
Well,
like,
it's funny because
red lipstick and like replacement t-shirt and the mixtape. That's all she
I
would
ever
have.
It, performed like outside of like, you know, the Minot, you know, Des Moines, Madison, Wisconsin triumvirate. I went, one of my college roommates was a woman named Michelle Norris, who used to be the host of All Things Considered, but this was when she was just in college. And she did an internship at WGBH, which is the public radio station in Boston. So I flew out to Boston to drive her and her stuff back from college to live in Minnesota. And I went to an open mic. She helped me get on an open mic. And Dana Gould was hosting the open mic. And that was the first time, because the weird thing about Minneapolis, we didn't have a college radio station. So we didn't understand that these bands were so popular outside of the Twin Cities. So I went to this club called Stitches, which was next to the Paradise. And Dana Gould was like, "You're from Minneapolis? Do you know these bands?" And I was like, "Yeah, I work. That guy's a fry cook at the restaurant that I work at in my day job. That guy's my roommate." And he was like, "What is happening to me right now?" And I was like, "How do you know these people?" And they're like, "They play it all the time on college radio." And I was like, "Oh my God. So when they actually go and do gigs in that shitty van, people come?" And he's like, "Yes, people come and love them." And so it was really funny to have this revelation. And I was like, so excited for my friends that they were like, and I was like, "God, they know you in Boston." And they're like, "Yeah, we told you that." And I was like, "I know, but you know."
Yeah. I mean, they were such a big deal. I mean, Minneapolis was such a big deal. And I guess it sort of seemed like a place that you wouldn't get to play because there wasn't also like a regular comedy club that you would go to as much. So I don't know. Well, I guess there was like what comedy, there was a Comedy Works. Was there a Comedy Works there?
There wasn't a Comedy Works. There was
Acme or something like that.
Well, Acme is there now, but I have never worked. I did that room one time. But that guy doesn't like me at all. He like hates me. He hates my politics. He hates me. So I've never performed there. But there was a club called the Comedy Gallery. And it had great headliners. And I think the thing about Minneapolis was that it was like there were so many strong opening and middle acts that very rarely did could you get booked there as a middle. You had to come in as a headliner at the club. And be able to like sell the club for five nights. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld was working for five nights and Jay Leno, like it was like that level. And so I think folks like you, like were all of a sudden, once you became big, you were working, I think, bigger rooms. I think you were doing theaters at that point and the clubs, were, you know, so it was kind of like that missed opportunity of missing a lot of folks who were up and coming, but I met folks who were of my sort of stature by traveling to do gigs in like Boston and San Francisco. That's when I hooked up with everybody who was sort of on my level, up and coming, and then going out into the world.
Yeah, it was like one of those things of like you wouldn't do I didn't do a lot of stuff there. Like I did like once, I think at the women's building or something. And
oh, that's a great room.
Yeah.
Yeah, that place was a cool is great. One. The women's club.
Yeah, I did that one. And then I did something at like in St. Paul and but never really played. I think maybe the gay 90s once or something.
Oh, yeah. You got to do the 90s. I mean, God bless. Something. Like every town. If it wasn't for the queer scene, I don't know where I would be.
Yeah.
You know,
but now do you do a lot of like stand-up shows? Like, I mean, before pandemic stuff, but like, do you do a lot of stand-up shows in town?
You know, I do the smaller little alternative rooms in Brooklyn. You know, we have a monthly show with Abortion Access Front at the at Union Hall. And that's, mm-hmm. and like, so we, that's really fun. And then I'll do the Bell House, or I'll do Littlefield, or I'll do who's ever got a show someplace in some spot like that. Caveat's a really nice room. Have you been to Caveat in the mm-hmm. city? It's a mm-hmm. really cool small room. And then when I go out on the road, if I'm not doing work with Abortion Access Front, I was talking to a while back, I kind of swore off clubs because A, I just don't want to do a second show Friday. And right. I just don't, like, if you're not going to market me the way I need to be marketed, it's just going to be full of people who are not going to have a good time, and they're going to hate it, and it's going to be the worst. So I started following sort of where people like Jill Sobule and smaller musicians were doing, like 300 or 400 seat music venues. And so I mostly do that. So I'll go to, like, if I'm in Asheville, I'll do the Grey Eagle, or in Burlington, Vermont, I'll do, there's a really cool small, the Flynn set space. And so, you know, I just like to find those rooms and then just do those, and then go on the local public radio station and kind of do it that way.
Yeah, that's actually really smart. I mean, it's like there's different ways to do it. You know, it's like I love the way that Doug Stanhope does his, like he'll go and do that sort of like rock club thing, or even David Cross does that too. And Jill Sobule's always like done stuff like that. Well, she'll like kind of find her groove. You know, whether it's like just figuring it out. And like a Frank Turner did that too. Like, it's just like there, it doesn't have to always be the clubs. And I like Maria Bamford was doing this thing where she would go to comedy clubs and play like the Monday at like a 7 o'clock.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. It's like, we're just going to do a little early thing, you know, eat dinner at 5:30, get a coupon. Come on down to the show. But I do, and I really like doing off markets because, A, like, I don't know, when you do political comedy and you can go to like Little Rock and do a small theater there or a small rock club, like, those folks are so grateful to hear somebody with progressive politics to come and do a show, because they think that nobody thinks that they're out there, and they're there. You know, Jackson, Mississippi, there's a small but mighty group of folks who are fighting the fight. And, you know, the fact that they don't have to travel to Atlanta constantly to go see somebody they want or wherever they are at. I just think it's more fun, and you really can talk to folks in a way and really learn about just culturally what they're up against and what they're fighting for, and that there's super good folks there in the world who deserve a show.
I know. And who need it. And it's really, I mean, it's so important. And it's like, it's just so disgusting right now what's happening. And I mean, of course, like, these crazy people are going to like try to use whatever situation to push this crazy pro-life or anti-abortion agenda, whatever shit, like the grotesque thing of like saying my body, my choice around the pandemic nightmare, you know, like that is the most disgusting, stupid shit.
That shit's crazy also. The thing that I have a lot of feelings about that. One of them is the poster, or I saw guys who had the mask on, but they cut the mask out, so they were just wearing the rubber to make a point. But also, it is so obvious to me that these people spent 2 weeks with themselves.
Yeah.
And were like, oh my God, I hate myself. I'm terrible. I need to leave my home because I can't be alone in my own thoughts. Because introspection makes me have to evaluate who I am, and I'm a terrible person. Also, they're terrible. These are the people who amass the guns and have the bunker, and they're supposed to be the good at survivalist shit. And it's like, all you did was the gun part. You don't have food. You don't have like the other shit. You're just bad at like, you're bad at the thing you say you desperately demand. And so, if you think you can shoot your way out of a pandemic, or you're just mad because you can't get the refill on the Big Gulp, like, oh my God, your selfishness is just profound.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
It's so sickening. I mean, after we did our Insta Live on the Abortion Front telethon, so I had a bunch of sort of trolly things, kind of like, well, I'm a feminist, and a bunch of feminists were killed during abortions.
Really?
What about their rights? When you're killing a fetus, you're actually killing women. So what about those feminists? And it's like, well, wait a second, though. Hold up. But it's like, wait a second. Hold up. It's such a weird, it's kind of like the anti-vaxxers, they're always the same, the weirdness of people who just won't be argued with. They won't be, the weird, high horse. It's a high horse, and it's, I don't know what it is. They can't be, you can't talk to them about it.
I just always am like, when they're like, life begins at conception, I'm like, A, conception is not a medical term. It's a term that comes from the Bible. But B, I don't subscribe to your premise on any level. And so when you say, what about, it's a life with different DNA. And it's like, cancer has different DNA. Like, things have different DNA, and potential life and life don't have the same value. Your pregnancy, you get to decide the value of your own pregnancy. And if the pregnancy that you have is a pregnancy that is unintended and not a pregnancy that you intend on carrying, then there is no mother, there is no baby. The intention is to no longer be pregnant. If you are pregnant and you're excited and you want to have a kid, you can put all the value on that pregnancy you want for yourself. And so it's interesting, trying to have those conversations is almost next to impossible. I literally saw a guy outside of a clinic protesting when I was at a clinic, who was wearing a t-shirt that had a fetus inside of a uterus, and the fetus was wearing a handmade outfit. And I was like, do you realize that your shirt doesn't make sense? And he's like, it makes sense. I go, have you seen the show? And he was like, yeah, that's why I'm wearing that. And I was like, in the show, nobody's lives matter. And he goes, this fetus life matter. And I go, I gotta go. You went and bought that shirt. I gotta go.
He doesn't understand the show. They don't understand.
And they just want to, make up their own rules just about life and about value and about pregnancy. And people are oftentimes like, are you just preaching to the choir? And I was like, A, we don't have a very big choir because people don't speak about abortion very much. And even people who profess to be progressive and liberal, they often will say to me can't we find common ground on abortion? And I said, at what point is the common ground? The common ground is my body belongs to the government. And at what point then do you think that my body doesn't belong to me? Because that's the compromise you're asking me to make. And that's a compromise that I won't make. And that's a fight that I will not stop fighting for every single person who has the potential to get pregnant. I just won't. So don't act like it's a wedge issue or that I'm being a bother. The bottom line is the full humanity and autonomy of people lie in the fact that you get to decide when and if you want to have kids and how you want to do that. So, and that just expands to all autonomy. And it's maddening to me that people are mad that that's a focus.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. Now, my favorite abortion was actually the abortion that I got in New York City, which was the menstrual extraction, which I think is illegal in a lot of places. I don't see it anywhere anymore.
It's like some state, I think it depends on if states that allow, and this is such a bone of contention for me, is that so many states don't allow nurse practitioners or medical assistants or physician's assistants do abortions. Some states do, and they should. Let, you know, qualified medical providers should be able to do abortions. And I think that menstrual extraction is like one of these great early ways to have an abortion that is safe and easy and convenient. And no, a lot of states don't allow it. Yeah.
It's super easy. Like, it's so like, I mean, it required no anesthesia, no hospital stay, no, you know, no, like, yeah, nothing, nothing, no drugs, no, no counseling, no driver home, no ride, like, you know, like, no attendant, no friend to take me there, bring me back. Like, there was nothing. Like, when you have an abortion, you can't go by yourself. You know, like, there's so much like put on a person when you go to have an abortion. Like, you're treated like a child. Yep. Like, you're treated like you're going to be really upset. You're treated like all this like weird shit's going to happen. You can't be alone for the next 24 hours or whatever. Like, it's this weird thing. Whereas menstrual extraction, you're like, it's going to take about 15 minutes. Bye. And then it's like, over. And then it's you know, you go and have a whatever, coffee, whatever, it's done.
Well, and that's the whole thing. It's like, who gets to decide what your abortion is? And there's so much stigma, and there's been so much societal, you know, feelings put on it that you don't even get to unpack your own pregnancy. Automatically, there's an assumption that you're going to feel guilt. You're going to feel regret. You need someone to come with you. You have to do all this stuff. You have to pay in cash. There's a bulletproof, you know, clear thing where you put your money. We won't take your insurance. Everything along the way is to take away your own feelings and decisions about what you want to do. And that part is so heartbreaking. And so often when I talk about abortion with folks and in longer situations, when they say, like, you know, what do you think the most egregious laws are that come down upon abortion restrictions? I often say, I think the waiting periods are the most dangerous, because what the waiting periods do is, if you say to somebody, you know, you need to wait 24 or 48 or 72 hours because we don't really need to think about it. You know, really want you to think about it. What that's doing is creating within societal norms a mistrust of the decisions that women and people make. And if we decide that women are incompetent at making decisions for themselves, that's going to translate into being incompetent about making decisions for other people in a job. And so for me, it's like, fuck those waiting periods, man, because all of a sudden it's like, do I want to hire a woman? Are they confident? Mm-hmm. You know, and that shit just permeates, man. So I worry about those. I worry about that the most.
Yeah, it really is disgusting. And it's really, there's no purpose for it. It's like, what's the point of that? You know, there's no real purpose. I mean, there's no point. There's no point at all.
There's no point to any of it. And it's all just designed to have shame. It's all designed to shut the clinics down. And it's all designed to create a narrative around abortion that is othering it into something that is not just a decision somebody might make in their reproductive life. Yeah. And that's why I'm so just dedicated, is because I want to try to swing the pendulum back, have the conversation so that the opening salvo can shift, and so that people don't feel afraid to talk about their abortions if they can have some tools and understanding around the conversation, so that we're not always on the defensive. And you're on the defensive if you buy into a premise that somebody sets up for you that you didn't. And that's why I'm just like, I don't buy your premise. You can lay out your shit all you want to me, but I don't buy your premise that abortion is murder. And if you think it's murder, you don't get to make jokes about it.
Right.
Because I think that that's actually really creepy. If you actually think this is all terrorizing and murder and genocide and all this shit, and then you're like, here's my wacky shirt or here's my joke, it's like, nah, No, yeah. You don't get to do that, because I wouldn't be joking about, like, you know, the Sudan or some shit happening. Like, I don't joke about that. So I get to make jokes because I don't think it's murder, you know? And people are like, how can you make jokes about abortion? I'm like, because it's just, I'd make jokes about any procedure I had, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't really care, you know? So when people are like, how many, like this guy one time said to me, how many abortions have you had? I'm like, I don't know. I don't save receipts. And then he was like, I was like, is it?
It's so great. But it's great.
Yeah, I care. I've had three abortions. I don't care. Like, I don't want to be pregnant three times. I feel like it's a miracle in all of the fucking I've done that I only got pregnant three times. It's sort of shocking.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's good. It's good. It's like, but it's sort of the, this whole thing of like, what does it even matter? And it's not, it has no bearing on anything. And, you know, it's just weird to me that this is still a fight. And yet, and it seems to be getting even more of like, even more of one as we grow, as like, we grow older, as I grow older, it's even worse. And like, even I'm like finding myself like still fighting for this with younger people and with younger women. Like, I'm like, what is happening to revolution, or what is happening to feminism? And like, I used to think, well, this was a fight of from, you know, like, I would never, ever think to question an older feminist. I would never question older feminism. Like, I would be like, older feminists are so right. And then, like, now I'm questioning younger feminists. Like, what the fuck is it? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, where is everybody, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, for me, and my, it was like, you know, I felt I had kind of moved on to just being generally political. And then about 10 years ago, when all these laws started happening, I was talking to this Black woman who worked at a clinic, and she said, well, part of the reason we're here is because privileged white people who had abortions just stepped off, and they didn't realize that other people need to have abortions, and a lot of people use our clinics, and that's their primary healthcare in their communities. And she was like, until everybody can step away from their abortion and just be like, go out their lives, everybody needs to fight to make sure that it's happening. And I was like, that is fair. You know what? I did exactly what you said. And it was really jarring for me to think about the fact that I just walked away from something, kind of assuming it was going to be there for other people, realizing that, you know, no one's fighting. If it's not us, who? But there's some super rad young people and super rad badasses who have reignited in a way that is, I feel really hopeful. Because I feel like they're not backing down. They don't have the shame. They don't care about how they're perceived. They care about righteousness. And I love that. It makes me feel really happy.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. It's really good. Because we can't let it go. We can't let it go. We can't let it go backwards. And it can't, like, but, you know, I do, like, I watch The Handmaid's Tale. And I'm like, is this what's going to become? If this is like, it does feel like, it's realer than ever. Like, you look at like Trump, and you look at like what's going on, and you look at like, I look at the anti-vaxxers, and I just think, I think we could get there so easily. We could get there so easily.
Well, even like the Supreme Court heard this week of the first week of May, just heard a case where the Trump administration wants to expand the birth control mandate to any boss or any company who feel morally opposed to birth control to be able to take it out of an insurance plan of their employees because of religious conviction. And we just heard, you know, that Hobby Lobby case a couple years ago where I guess Hobby Lobby decided it was a Christian craft store, which I don't even know what the fuck that means. I don't know. What is it? What do you sell there? 2x4s? Like, what is that? But, you know, decided that because of their religious conviction, they didn't want to have birth control in their plans, and that it applied to, you know, those who could prove that they had a religious conviction, which I think is bullshit in and of itself. But now the government wants any corporation to have to, without having to prove anything, just say, I'm morally against this. And so too bad for you. You're going to have to go find birth control on your own. And it's like, you know, and like Ruth Bader Ginsburg was like, but wait, the whole point of this is we have a preventative medicine that several sexes enjoy the benefits of. And then one person, the people with the uteruses, have to bear all the burden of pregnancy. And so we should make it free since everyone benefits from it. Like that is just how that should go. And they're like, yeah, we just don't think that it's, again, we don't think that it's essential. And it, and if somebody's offended by having to have that, it's like, they don't have to have it. This is the part I don't understand. You don't have to take the birth control. You don't have to get the birth control. You don't have to see the birth control. Like your employee isn't like having their IUD done in the break room. Like, what are you like, I don't understand. Yeah. I don't understand. And yet they're just trying to, with every law that puts agency on a fetus or agency on the boss or whatever, it's taking away the agency of women. Every one of these mm-hmm. laws takes away our rights in lieu of giving rights to things that aren't born, people who pay us. What the fuck? Like, yeah. It's wild. So you're to your point. Yeah. Handmaid's Tale is kind of here. We're getting
it's coming.
There.
It's coming.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can't
unless we want to stop it, you know, and yeah. That's what we got to do is we just have to stand together in solidarity and we have to stand together in solidarity. And also like cis men got to step up too, because full emancipation means that people are standing up for your rights because it's a human rights violation and it's not a women's issue or whatever issue. Like everyone mm-hmm. needs to stand up for it and treat it for what it is, which is believing that the full humanity of people needs to be valued and it's our constitutional right. We're not anyone's property in any way, shape or form, not even a little.
Yes, that's so right. You're right. We are so our own. We need agency and we need our rights. That's right.
100%.
That's right.
I know.
Well, you're the best. You're the best.
You're the best. I'm so excited to be on. And I took a shower for you. I was feeling very good and I feel squeaky clean. And
you're
we had
the
a
best.
Super good conversation.
I know.
And
Thank you.
I'm hoping that we can, when all this is over, we can see each other and just like chill out. I want to chill out in your backyard where you are.
I know. Well, I would love that anytime. And where can people find you and your organization and find out all about it and your handles and all of that?
All of that. You can find me on all the handles at Liz Winstead. I spell my name with two Z's. You can find my organization at Abortion Front. You can find out and you can like, there's so many ways to hang out with us. Our activism is we lead with fun, we lead with humor, and we lead with righteous disruption. So if you feel like you just want to get your shit out there and you want to laugh and have fun, like we are your crew. And, you know, we make the lives of independent abortion providers better. We make the lives of people who need abortions better. And we make your life better if you are somebody who is anywhere in that continuum. So at Abortion Front on all the places.
Thank you, Liz.
Thanks, Margaret.
It's taking over my dreams, waking me out of my sleep. I think I'm coming apart.
The Margaret Show is an Erios production with editing by Tracy Levy and original music by Garrison Starr. Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Erios. Powered by Acast.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. juvederm.com. That's juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.